What's up, Music City? My name is E.T. This is the Fringe Radio Show on WRFNLP, Pasquo, Tennessee. Radio Free Nashville, radiofreenashville.org, 103.7 FM on your dial, and 107.1 in the western part of Nashville. But again, always worldwide at radiofreenashville.org. Just click on that play button right at the top of the page. We are sponsored by the Nashville Fringe Festival. Please go to NashvilleFringeFestival.org to check out the organization. You can make a tax-deductible donation. You can be in tune with what's going on in the city. You can also listen to previous radio broadcasts. And the Fringe Festival exists to celebrate the diversity of Nashville artists and to honor the legends among us who enrich our city and inspire our lives. Don't forget, we're here every Monday night, 6 to 7 p.m. Central. Spread the word. We appreciate the support that you guys have continued to show us over the years and help spread the word about the Nashville Fringe Festival. Tonight on the show, I'm joined by my co-host, Al D, in the building, as well as Just Bam. And we're excited to tell you guys about a project that's been happening for the past several years. And I'm going to let you guys know finally what it is, what it's about, and when you might be able to check it out. So I'm going to turn it over to Al D, and he can talk about the birth of this project and kind of the whole process that's been going on for many, many years now.
Yeah, so way back in 2018, I was approached by Nashville Fringe Festival with this idea to write and produce a play telling the story of the sit-in movement that occurred here in Nashville in 1960, which was an integral part of the civil rights movement at the time. So that idea took shape at that point. And, you know, an amazing part of the project is that it was sponsored by Nashville Fringe Festival. So everyone who worked on it at various points was paid for their time. And that's due to the generosity of Nashville Fringe Festival. So very appreciative of that. But, you know, that idea took form, like I said, in 2018. It's substantially based on a book called The Children by David Halberstam. I read that and took a lot of notes and outlined the different characters and started there. And started producing the beats for it as well around that time, which are all samples from local Nashville bands. And then in 2019, I got Just Bam involved with the project as a co-writer. She's been my partner on it since then. And yeah, that was sort of the jumping off point. So Just Bam's here in the studio as well today. So we're here to talk about it. And it's called the Sit-In Mixtape. It took shape originally intended to be a live event, but we ran into a pandemic along the way, and it, you know, switched gears. And the current version of it is like a video of a play that was shot at NECAT, which is a public access TV station with a mission similar, I'd say, to the sponsors that were mentioned in the intro there. Nashville Fringe Festival, of course, Radio Free Nashville, all trying to like elevate local music. And really glad to have been a part of this thing and that Just Bam got involved and everyone else. Will talk a lot about the details during the show.
So I'm curious, when you were approached with the project, were you already aware of the story, or did you, is this something that, you know, you just learned more about, or what was your experience when you first started researching the project?
So I was aware that of the sit-ins at the lunch counters as being part of the civil rights movement. And I knew that Nashville had been, you know, that there was a time Nashville was a significant part of that, but I couldn't have told you the names of the people involved and everything. Yeah. Like I can, having researched it now and read a few books and watched a whole lot of documentaries and just talked about it a lot with everyone who's been involved with the project. So, you know, it's been going on for 5 years, so
yeah, no doubt.
It's been kind of under wraps the whole time. And especially when we ran into the pandemic, I was sort of grateful that we hadn't spent 5 years explaining to people like when this thing was going to come out, because it didn't, you know, nothing happened for a couple of years, to be clear. It's not like we worked on it for five years straight, but real grateful for Just Bam, everything she's done, like, throughout from the beginning. And of course, E.T. Plays Mayor Ben West, the radio partner host here today.
Bow tie and all.
And we should run down all the, just the cast, I guess, in a sec here.
Yeah, well, Just Bam, so you star in the production, you wrote, you produced, you directed, you really did it all. So, you know, I'm curious to hear your perspective of kind of the beginning when you were first brought into the project. What were some of your thoughts and sort of where did you go from there?
What I do remember that really stuck out when Al D first approached me about it, he was like, hey, you know, I got this budget and I want to do a play about the Nashville sit-in movement, but I'm a white guy. I don't know the struggle of black people during the civil rights movement, and I just felt like I need someone, you know, who could help us be authentic, because that was very important from the very beginning. We didn't want to just make words. Yeah. We were very conscientious of being historically correct. And he asked if I would be interested in helping him write the lyrics for the different characters. And I think at that point, Aldi, you had already decided what students we were going to focus on, because he read the book first.
Yeah.
And then...
So I think I had it to 6 or 7. Like, you definitely helped, like, when it came to, like, certain points in writing it, of like, well, who would say this, who would say that?
Yeah.
And, like, what we kind of were trying to say, I guess, or put the perspective we were trying to highlight. And we did kind of, like, sub in and out some of the people as it was not cast yet at that point. So this was the characters we're considering.
Because I was originally, when he approached me, he wanted me to play Diane Nash, who is one of the students that we focus on in the book. And a lot of people know her, especially in Nashville, because she was the person who confronted Ben West at the courthouse steps when the decision, or somewhat the decision, was made to desegregate the lunch counter. So she was well known, but I was just like, oh, definitely, I want to do this. I want to be this character. And my original plan, what I think, was just to write Diane's lyrics when we first started.
That's Well, I was going to say, too, in regard to what you said a second ago, a huge part, like, I didn't also feel, like, as confident to be writing the female characters. And so my original vision was a little more along the lines of that, like, the people that I got involved would write their own stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we were thinking at first.
The way it went down is me and Just Bam wrote it.
Met, like, every Sunday, you know, or every other Sunday.
Explain that writing process to me a little bit. How does that work? You know, is it just kind of just a back and forth where you're throwing out ideas and then you're asking about them? And then how did that come to be?
The first thing we did was decide who was going to be who.
Yeah.
Because not only were we writing lyrics about someone else, we were portraying 5 different characters at the same time.
Yeah.
So both of us were writing different characters, and also we both were writing on the characters. Like, it wasn't like one for one, like, I wrote this person, she wrote that person, but the first draft was kind of coming of, like, I was writing some people and she was writing some people.
Yeah.
But we wrote it very collaboratively, for sure, whereas, like...
And before we even started even putting lyrics down, we went to the library.
Yeah.
We watched the documentaries. They have a room dedicated to this particular movement.
Yeah, and the civil rights room at the Nashville Public Library downtown is amazing. There's documentaries and huge blown up pictures all around the perimeter, and like this timeline around the middle, and it's beautiful. And, you know, the library downtown's cool generally, so.
And the first thing I thought was, like, the book that the children is, like, it's a big book. It's 1,000 pages. How do we get all of that, because it just, it talks about them later in life and what they ended up doing. And we just kind of like tried to focus in on what parts do we want to say.
Yeah. Where's the story?
So we would we did it song by song, and then we kind of started mixing and putting them together and doing multiple ones.
We should acknowledge too that in a sense, the outline was brought to me by Jan Bossing at Nashville Fringe Festival, which was, of course, the sponsor who brought the initial idea to me. But it was sort of what was brought to me in the beginning was sort of a 4-bullet-point outline that went, the students study in the workshops, do the lunch counter protest to...
They get arrested.
Well, I guess I could switch to the 8 songs it ended up being, but you know, it was a beginning and an end sort of defined by that, which was that it starts in the workshops and it ends at the confrontation on the courthouse steps that just Bam talked about a second ago. So like, and I would say it was for Diane Nash to be the main character was Jan's idea from the beginning, I think. Mm-hmm. So I was immediately going to step one, who's Diane Nash, right? Like, that's sort of the task put to me as a play format. So,
and then as we started doing the research and reading the books and understanding the characters that he had spoken of, we started to sort of like adapt and fall in love with these people in a way, because we were learning their history and got attached to that character or that person. Like Bernard is one, immediately became one of my fan faves of the students. But in the beginning, I didn't know the depth of what Nashville's impact was on the civil rights movement. I knew that they had sit-ins. I knew about Woolworth. I knew about the lunch counter. But to get that deep and understand like how it started something was amazing to me. And it just made me want to be more and more authentic. And it just made me want to...
Well, I can imagine ever being in a situation like that where you just sit there and let these type of things happen to you and not do anything. So to consider, you know, the movement was so much more important than just one person. It's just an amazing story. And I've learned so much, you know, being a part of it as well. And that's, I always say that this is a story that needs to be told. And told for many, many generations. I did want to ask, you know, the 5 students, was that also in the outline, or did you just kind of...
Well, like I said, there was definitely 6 or 7 that were sort of under consideration, which was essentially just me choosing, because there were, you know, hundreds to thousands of, well, thousands of people, you know, hundreds of students, I'm sure, and also others, but... I was essentially starting with the ones that Halberstam had chosen to include in that book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a lot of people for me to like track and learn about and study separately. And so I was just sort of got it to 5 from there, from a little bit of a practical standpoint.
And we wanted to represent each school.
Yeah.
So
that was part of it too.
One, each of them, Meharry, American Baptist, TSU, which was TSU A&I, the top at Fisk. So we wanted to pick someone who represents each of the universities as well.
Yeah, that's true. That definitely was part of when I had forgotten about that part for a second, but when we were considering the ones that were considered, we definitely wanted to get one from each school, because that's, you know, them being students and from these specific schools is a big part of the history, I think.
No doubt. So I'm curious, you know, in the beginning it was you talked about it was kind of an audio project. It was meant to be sort of a live show. So Bam, you were heavily involved in the direction of the project visually. Talk a little bit about that process, sort of bringing that to life as a visual project, and what you sort of learned along that process.
I learned so much on this project. I had never written lyrics for someone else to say.
Yeah, me neither, so, by the way. That was interesting.
We had a moment when we started casting it and they were coming into Aldi's studio to actually record the songs, and we were both like, dang.
It's crazy. Like, I want to just real quick shout out Rem Steele. He plays James Lawson. He's the first person that came in who'd agreed to, like, perform these rhymes written by someone else. And he came and just killed it. I had budgeted a lot more time. Like, he came and just recorded the whole thing in a day, and I was like, nice. It sounds like Rem Steele too. That's what's cool. It doesn't sound like us. It sounds like Rem Steele.
And it snowballed because everybody, because we were worried about, you know, like, we asking MCs to come in and we wrote this down. But I feel like the characters, once they heard about their character and we told them the backstory of their character, it was really smooth. So that was a moment for both of us, I think, when we heard what we wrote and they put it into character and made it a person, you know. And then when the pandemic hit, our original goal was to do it as a live production in front of an audience, and we were rehearsing that. So I come from a theater background, so we added some blocking to it and some movement, and then the pandemic hit, and we were just sitting around waiting to get somewhere. And luckily, shout out to Kneecat, I am a producer there, and I got the idea, like, well, what if we recorded it so that everyone would have something to look at and remember, and we would remember our lines, and because we didn't know how long we were going to sit.
Yeah, and that was an ironic thing. We were talking about shooting it at Kneecat before even really the pandemic was fully clear. Like, it was just kind of like rumblings of like, oh, maybe there's going to be a problem. And then eventually it's like, oh, we're not doing anything at all for a year.
Right.
So it's going to sit on a shelf. And even when we did get started, we still weren't like about to do an event with 100 people or something. So it was just us, the 8 of us, 10 of us shooting at a time. Yeah, it was cool.
And it was going to be kind of like a visual rehearsal of, so everyone would remember.
Right.
So when it was time, we would be good to go.
Yeah.
But what happened is we got in there and we started making it, and it turned into something great. And we were all like, hey, this
And it
is
opened
really
up the
good.
Opportunities to use some of the pieces from documentaries in the video, I think, too, like, brings a lot of historical context and a certain visual thing that wouldn't have been there if it was just a play in the traditional
sense. Yeah.
And by the way, it's all bars. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's a play, right. But it's like,
it's all bars.
Yeah,
it's all bars.
It's the sit-in mixtape.
Yeah.
8 songs. I want to run down the cast and characters song titles as
please.
The sort of final
it's
version
been described as a hip hopera, which I think kind of fits it too.
Fits
you
it.
Know?
I think it does. I think we were able to get MCs who could turn it into what it became, because we're talking about history here. You know, these are not about, you know, hip hop rhymes where in the party. Yeah. We're talking about some heartfelt emotions where you're being spit on and you still have to sit there and don't move. How do you translate that? And watching them do it was amazing to me. Watching them come in and perform it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. You did an awesome job as
everybody we asked to like be part of it was really enthusiastic, and like you know, I was lucky enough to be in a position where I'm bringing someone an opportunity where they're going to get paid to work on it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everybody was like, say no more. If
anyway.
For something like this, I'm going to do it. Yeah. Like they would have done it for free for sure.
Yeah.
And that was awesome.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about maybe the cast and the students and you know, just mention some of those people.
Yeah. The cast of MCs, Nashville MCs, and the cast of characters that sort of correspond. So, I'm going to tell it, I guess, a little bit as a story from the beginning. So we sort of talked about the writing process some there. And the reality of what that looked like was that I invited Just Bam, an Afro pick, who happened to be in town that weekend, though she's typically not. And I was sort of like, hey, that's cool. She should come because, you know, she's Afro pick.
Yeah.
Right.
And I had invited a couple of others who actually didn't show up. So me just Bam Afropix sat down for the first time with the outline I had and the beats I had made and started kicking stuff around. It was never really like Afropix was going to be in it because she doesn't live here, but she did help with some of the writing. So yeah. Especially day one like that. And at some other times later too, like she wrote some things that we ended up using. And several of the local MCs that were cast wrote some really dope things too, and all of them interpreted what we had done and made it their performance, which is it's credited as writing contributions by everyone involved, because that's the truth, you know. So that's how I feel about it. At least. So the way the cast ended up, we had Rem Steele as James Lawson, of course. Just Bam is Diane Nash. We talked about Bernard Lafayette. Just Bam had mentioned previously as someone who was important to us and the research and everything. So Bernard Lafayette was originally cast as B.A. the Lou, who wrote some portions of the Bernard lyrics. He's unfortunately moved to Texas during the pandemic, and so we ended up recasting his part as Loso the Great. We have Malcolm DeWayne portraying Curtis Murphy, who was a student at TSU, which was called Tennessee A&I at the time. Bernard Lafayette, by the way, was a student at American Baptist. We got Rock Music as Gloria Johnson, who was a student at Meharry. We had C.T. Vivian as a character in the story, who's not one of the five students. He was an older reverend. And we originally had cast Ahmad Rashad in that part, and subsequently was recast in later years as the Quiet Entertainer. Or he just says Quiet Entertainer now, excuse me.
Yeah, just Quiet Entertainer,
But yeah, and him and Just Bam are sort of the only people out of the cast really that have much experience in acting. So, you know, these are mostly local Nashville MCs doing something different here. So we had Train Spitta portraying Jim Bevel. We had Foundation portraying Z. Alexander Luby. So that's also not one of the students, but he was one of the first two black city councilmen elected in Nashville. Him and one other were elected the same year. And the reason he's in the story is because he defended the students when they were on trial in court as a result of the sit-ins. And then finally we had your co-host E.T. Playing Mayor Ben West. There's a handful of extras as well, but that's the primary cast there. And so Mayor Ben West was confronted by the students among thousands of other people on the courthouse steps, primarily by Diane Nash, or at least Diane Nash was the one who was successful in reasoning with him, I guess. So that's, that's the cast. And I of course, want to thank all of them for being involved, from the beginning, working through the process and agreeing to do this sort of unusual thing of performing something they necessarily didn't write everything. And that was new for all of us, like we talked about. So shout out to everyone that was a part of it on that side. I guess I'm going to go on and just shout there's a lot of cuts on the music. And that's, for me, in my world, the usual suspects, DJ Vamp, DJ Rate, Quiet Entertainer did some cuts as well. And I probably noodled around a little bit
He's the only non-MC, really.
Yeah, and that's true. Isn't really historically known as an MC. And because of his acting chops, we decided to give him a shot and see how that went. And that was, like, when we went in the studio the first time to record, was fun, just because we were see what's great.
And he killed it.
He did kill it.
And then
fun.
On the other hand, we had a bunch of dope MCs who had not did any acting before. Right. So it was like, I remember the first day we shot, one of the big things we had to keep reshooting because everybody was doing their hip hop dance. Yeah. You know, we
it
had
was
to
rapper hands.
Rapper hands. We were calling it because we were so used to performing, but you had to come at it in a different way and show the character.
I think you'll still see some of that in the project too, which is kind of cool. I guess it kind of fits the mixtape vibe. So you do see the MC come out.
So let's talk about the title for a minute. It's called the Sit-In Mixtape, which raises the question, is it a mixtape? And it sort of is, I feel like, more so. It wasn't necessarily when we came up with the title, but as it is now, there's audio spliced in from different documentaries and recordings, you know, historical recordings of the actual people talking, in some cases from interviews and news and...
Yeah,
we leaned on the DJs to like scratch those pieces together and make it like a scratch hook and sound. It kind of does sound like a mixtape in that sense. And I kind of think of it as a mixtape of like history and documentary footage and music and hip hop and local Nashville bands and local Nashville MCs all mixed together in like a whole way. So I want to, on that note, talk about just a little bit more about some of the source material, which, you know, like I mentioned, we were using audio from documentaries with DJs scratching it. So just to sort of, and we mentioned that we watched a lot of those documentaries at the public library. So I'm going to just mention a few of those. There's Eyes on the Prize, America's Civil Rights Years, particularly the 1954 to 1965, which, again, just listen off some documentaries. Nashville, We Were Warriors, reenactment of the 1960 sit-in trials, which was written by Gary C. Shockley and some others. It was like a, not a documentary, but a reenactment of the trial. So it
a
had
really
audio
good one too, actually.
Really good
And then The Children Who Changed the World, Council for the Children. Oh, these are actually some papers that were written, excuse me. I guess I'll just go on and read them anyway. Council for the Children, an NBC white paper, sit-in, 1960, Anatomy of a Demonstration, King in the Wilderness. Of course, I mentioned it's primarily based on the book The Children by David Halberstam, but just some others I'll just mention that I read and drew from was Walking with the Wind by John Lewis. That's his autobiography. Secrets of the Hopewell Box, particularly when it comes to some of the like local politics aspect of it. And then again, all the documentaries, and we also just were all over YouTube and internet scouring for information that maybe we could have done a little bit better job of tracking. And even with some of the audio cuts, like we were pulling stuff from YouTube just to be real. So it's hip hop, you know, it's not. It is and it isn't.
But I feel like it is a mixtape because we took our interpretation of events and turned it into a hip hop vibe with the scratching, the DJ, and the mixing. And then when we were in the studio recording the project, we used the green screen, and I just thought it would be so impactful if we showed some of that real raw black and white like footage from what really happened, so you can really understand where it was. It does change it, and using a lot of history from Nashville. We use pictures of the courthouse at that time period in your scene as the mayor, so we were incorporating and remixing history and telling the story in a different way.
That particular scene, just seeing those pictures of just that mass of people. It's really, really powerful. So I know the idea in the beginning was to also pull your samples from local music, which is kind of the Nashville Fringe Festival's, you know, theme is all about local music. So I thought that was a really cool idea, that not only is it written by local people and produced by local people, and you have local people starring in the production, but even the samples that you use for the music came from local bands.
Artists.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
I'm going to just go down the song titles, and I guess then I'll note the samples that were used in the band. So the first song, The Workshop, James Lawson introducing the students to the nonviolence movement at the workshops that he started there. And we have a sample from Naturally by Laura Reed, produced by Laura Reed and Shannon Sanders. So that's number one. Second song, it's called Basic Training, and that has a sample of DeRobert and the Half-Truths, GED Soul Records. This beat that's playing right now, by the way, is kind of the song that plays during the credits, and it's actually also DeRobert and the Half-Truths, so shout out to them. You know we got big love for GED Soul and the whole Nashville community and anything I'm involved with and Radio Free Nashville and all that. So they were there, several of them were sampled, as you'll hear in a moment. And song number three is called Recon. It's got a sample from I Got Warrants by Magic and Threes. That's also GED Soul. Big Saturday. So this is the one that's like occurs at the lunch counters, and Big Saturday is the recognized name of that event. And that beat is built around a sample, Typical Feeling by AJ and the Gigawatts, GED Soul as well. And I'm gonna want to just shout out, there's some extras in that I'm gonna shout out real quick. First, I'm, as you may have noticed, not cast as a main character. I'm involved as a writer and producer, I'd say primarily, but I play the police officer in Big Saturday and the jail song that follows.
Officer D.
Officer D.
So I'm going to shout out though the other extras that were in that particular song. Raheem Beck, Damian Lee, David Justiano, Top Notch, and Kenya Ely. So that's what's up. And then
and shout out to Raw Proof, he was there.
He was in the March song, or maybe he's in both. There was a whole nother round of students in the lunch counter scene that was in a first version we didn't use, I guess.
Shout out to Raw Proof for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. So then the jail song, Jail No Bail, has a sample, Line of Sight by Concurrence. The Courthouse song, it's a sample. Oh, there's samples from the reenactment of the sit-in trial, like we said. But also the beat is Never Be My Baby by Fauna Halo. The March, number seven, this is when, you know, the thousands of people are marching down Jefferson to the courthouse. And what, I don't know if we should, we could tell that whole story, but anyhow, the March song, the beat is Animal by Alana Royale. And then the last song, The Confrontation on the Courthouse Steps, with your boy E.T. here, it has a sample from A-Rod by Space Capone. So all of these are bands that I love, that I'm a fan of, Nashville musicians who allowed us, we used all those samples with permission. This has been discussed with all of them for years, and in some cases their management, and we're putting out this thing. The premiere is going to be April 20, and we've got permission from all them to screen that. It's going to screen on NECAD as well, and everyone's able to come see this thing, courtesy of them, you know, letting us use these samples for the beats, which is something I've not ever gone through and really done before as a hip hop artist. I've been off the grid with the samples like we do until you make it. But in this case, since there was a budget for the project, I felt like it was appropriate to like share that fairly with the like how we were paying ourselves to work on it, that we'd pay them to for the use of the samples in a proportional way there. So thanks to them for letting us do that.
And I'd say
thanks
one
again
other
to
group,
Fringe for making that possible.
I want to mention the Danberries, who the beat that I made that I sampled from them.
Oh, we use that in Jimmy. The intro.
It's off in the background of a Diane Nash interview that's in there. So the Danberries is where that came from, and that was their song Jimmy that we sampled.
Nice.
So maybe we can just kind of dive into to each song a little bit and give people kind of a preview of what they're expecting to see. So take us through the tracks, Bam, and tell us a little bit more about them.
So the project or the play opens up with the workshop, and the workshop is Reverend Lawson started these sort of nonviolent workshops in the basements of a church in Nashville on Jefferson Street, where he was teaching the students how not to react to people spitting on them, calling them names, and sort of warming them up to doing the sit-ins. And we took that and kind of highlighted Lawson a lot in that song, I think, you know, just so that people can understand that he worked with Gandhi and where his thought process was coming from with that. And it introduces you to the students. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their little intro in there. And then we go to basic training. And basic training is when they started doing the workshops, they would meet up every week and sort of practice.
Yeah.
And they would literally have people who were part of the group, you know, yelling at them and just to get their mind set for
like acting out what they think is going to happen in an actual protest or in an actual sit-in, which sort of gradually became the goal. Because it started, I would say, from the context of Lawson was someone who had studied Gandhi and Martin Luther King and had met Martin Luther King, who encouraged him to come to the South.
Yeah.
And he decided Nashville, mm-hmm. which sort of is, I think we feel, a part of why the civil rights movement was sort of centered here at that time because of what he did. So that's why, you know, it's sort of the beginning of the story as it was brought to me. James Lawson. And then basic training with the acting out things.
It was rules of engagement for basic training. We did. We have a verse in there where we break all that down of what they were expected to do and not to speak, not to cause drama, you know, mm-hmm. just sit. They were reading, you know, no one was engaging.
Yeah, and I think in that song also was like prior to just the general idea that there would be some protest of segregation, but mm-hmm. this is like where they're deciding to target the lunch counters.
Which ones they're going to target. And then, you know, we went to recon because in the story, when we were doing the research before the actual event on Big Saturday, they did several sit-ins. You know, they would go to lunch counters, go to different places and see what the reaction would be.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. test runs where they didn't refuse to get up, but they just went and just sat there just to see what would happen and sort of gather information and decide, like, well, how did this place act? How did that place act? Yeah. So that's the recon.
The recon, yeah. Right. Which was interesting to see how people initially reacted to mm-hmm. it. And then we try, it's a lot to kind of cram in one spot, but we wanted to even show like the police corruption about the whole situation too. And those people who, the store owners who were in politics. So we tried to get all that cramped in showing that with recon.
Yeah.
And then there's Big Saturday. Big Saturday is the actual event most people hear about, know about, when they actually went into the lunch counters and sat and they were arrested. And every time someone got arrested and pulled from the seat, another student would go sit and replace them in that seat. And so that was like a very powerful and impactful piece that we wanted to show. And we show that in the play, how they replaced it continuously all day.
It's very, very powerful to see that.
Hundreds of people
one
got
after
arrested.
Another, you know, one person is gone, another person comes in. Mm-hmm.
The transition, I think, too, from the recon to Big Saturday was a little bit gradual because Big Saturday wasn't actually the first protest where they refused to get up. It was just the first one where sort of anything actually happened.
Like, no,
they basically, like, they were looking for protection from the police and not getting it. And they just sort of closed the store and then nothing happened. And so on Big Saturday, what happened is a white mob attacked them, at which point sort of they went according to plan and did not fight back. And so nonetheless get arrested and end up in jail, which is song 5. So that's where they're in jail.
Jail, no bail. That was my favorite one to shoot because we did a lot of artistic stuff with them being in the jail cell in the studio, and it reflects like their thought process, because you gotta remember these are college students who had career paths. They were going to Meharry trying to be doctors, and getting arrested could have ended everything for them. And
they're putting their lives on the line.
A lot of it, their parents were not on board with this, you know. Mm-hmm. Their parents came from segregation and Jim Crow, where you don't speak up, you don't cause trouble, you don't say anything. So it we tried to show the emotional impact of that in Jail Nobel, and the fact that one of the things about that that really stands out is they could have paid the bail.
Right.
They had raised money from all the black people, all, you know, the black neighborhoods mm-hmm. in Nashville. Churches had donated money to get them out of jail.
So I said it's all bars. And of course, I've also mentioned that there's also scratching DJ stuff from historical audio and all that. But there are some lines in there. And for example, the direct quote from Diane Nash, where in court she refuses on behalf of all the students to pay the bail and says they're going to go to jail on principle. That's a direct quote from Diane Nash that we used there. That's not bars. So just to be clear, there's some narrations between the songs, but it's not a play like with a sections of that's not.
Well,
rhymes.
And I think it's some of the bits, the historical images that you will see in that song too to show how crowded these jails were. I mean, they were to the point where they couldn't get any more people in there. It's just amazing to see
the organization staggering because they had enough people participating where the lunch counters didn't get empty because every time they arrested someone else sat down. And then to the point that they didn't have room in the jail anymore. So that they were like people, some of the characters actually we read about were like Jim Bevel, I guess I'll just say, even though we show him in the lunch counter, technically he wasn't there. As a matter of fact, he decided not to do it. And when it happened, he went out and tried to get arrested later. Because he like regretted that he had not been a part of it. He went out to try to get arrested.
Yeah,
and like
there
wasn't room in the jail at that point, so he wasn't really able to.
Yeah, the next scene, the courthouse, Aldi talked about the reenactment of this trial that they had that we have found footage of. We actually scratched in the judge talking to Alexander Luby. And you can see that it was so many people on trial that the judge started running them five at a time, each person. Yeah. And it,
and that was kind of a cool thing too, because the way we did our story, we decided to have five students representing the men.
Yeah.
And there's that line in the trial where he says, we're going to pick up the rest of these cases
five at a time.
And so we have our five students on trial that corresponds with that. And the court scene's really cool, and Foundation killed it as Luby. And the prosecutor and the judge are represented by the audio from that trial manipulated by DJs. So we didn't have the like those characters cast as like performers for just certain reasons. So we went a different way and sort of let the DJs carry that
joint. I think
it
came out better that way because
the DJs killed it. Vamp went off on that. And we used a lot of audio from different things, and the prosecutor talking and the judge talking, and then we got Foundation as Luby killing it. So and I want to just go ahead and get into the next song here a little bit with the timeline. So Alexander Luby volunteers to defend these children, and I say children, students, though they weren't that far from being children.
They were still probably children.
Anyway, so what happens at that point, they're in jail, or getting out of jail, I guess, or whatever. He had defended them, and his home is bombed, presumably by the KKK. No one's ever caught or anything, so who knows exactly, but his house is bombed, and the reaction from the this is obviously in retaliation for him having defended the students, and of course probably just being elected as a black person as well. But then the response from that is that same day there's a spontaneous march of 4,000 people. So that song 7 is the march that starts with like revealing the bombing and then the march down Jefferson Street that passes all the HBCUs that are still there now, and everybody joins in, and it's like thousands of people.
And we were just on Jefferson Street.
And we were just, I was thinking about that. We announced this thing publicly last night on Jefferson Street for the first time because we were doing a show there for Just Bam's birthday. And shout out to Just Bam for getting up and coming here today, setting an alarm clock the day after the birthday just to be a part of this. We got pushed back by the weather twice.
Yes.
This thing's been coming forever, but it's premiering April 20th. the last at Kneecat, the last song is the confrontation on the courthouse steps with Mayor Ben West, played by E.T.
So there's a historical photo that has been in pretty much natural history forever of that moment, and with the confrontation, it was important for us. We wanted Mayor Ben West to be represented, but sort of like not the focal point of the entire play. And to get that moment where they reach him and, you know, and trying to get his perspective, because we were trying to, you know, do that. It wasn't easy for him to agree to any of this because he was under pressure from the store owners and from white America. And, you know, so we tried to show that. And confrontation, I feel like it's like one of the best endings to it, because it sort of brings it all full closure, because they did eventually desegregate the lunch counters because of this movement.
Yeah. And then you sort of wrap it all up at the end. Diane Nash sort of kind of comes in and just sums it all up for you.
Diane Nash had a lot of bars.
I wanted to mention, so she said about that famous image. Of course, we used images in the video and everything. And, in terms of the source material, too, I should mention the Tennessean, which has a wealth of information and images available. And I'm going to shade the banner for a second, because they did not really do the right thing at the time. They didn't really cover these events. And that's the author of the book it's primarily based on was a journalist for the Tennessean at the time. So he's writing a book about something he witnessed as a journalist and covered as a journalist. And the coverage was a great deal more than what was released publicly then. I think both of those organizations have all this information available now. But, you know, at the time, the Tennessean was, you know, so-called the liberal paper, and the Banner was the other.
And I
was
think
not
was,
trying to put a light on these events.
That was one of the challenges we had with writing it, because it was so much information, and it was things that happened that, like, it went over a span of months, and we crashed it into 8 songs, you know? So we wanted to make sure we hit notes of what really happened and call those things out. And that was a challenge for me, I know, just to make sure we got it all.
As far as, and of course we certainly didn't, and there are so many people we didn't include in the story, but that were considered and weren't considered. But as far as the images, too, specifically, the one you mentioned, we have a really great cover art that's kind of came from a collage of such images that was painted by, I'm going to let E.T. talk about Olaf for a minute, who we got to do this original painting to be the cover art for this thing, which y'all have probably seen by now if you're listening to this recording, because we're putting it all out for the first time now and about to start letting the world know about the sit-in mixtape. And Ola's an awesome artist.
So, yeah, I've known Ola for over 10 years. We worked together a long time ago, which is how we met. And then he knew I was a hip-hop artist. I knew he was an artist.
Matter of fact, we performed at one of his art shows.
We did, yeah. And he, boy, to see where he's, I mean, he's had, you know, NBA players like commission him to make drawings or paintings. The guy
he has a gallery in Clarksville.
Yeah,
too.
Just so talented. Art by Ola, O-L-A. You can search that.
It's draftsbyola.com.
Yeah.
You can find him.
There you go. Perfectly. And I've had him do some drawings that I've given as Christmas presents before to some of my family, and some of these things he's done. One was just with pencil, and it's the freaking Picasso. The kid is just super talented. So shout out to Ola.
I bought a print at that art show where we performed, and that's just cool. Like that, he had even asked us to do some hip hop at our art show, and then we have an opportunity to ask him to do some art for this hip hop project.
Yeah, just all the people involved.
Me and Just Van went out to the studio and gallery there and talked about it and sort of decided the images and came up with the idea and everything, and of course turned him loose to do his things.
Man, he's amazing. So we're getting closer to the end of the program. I want to take an opportunity to ask you both, you know, it's been so long, and while we know this project is not finished, what we have now is sort of a finished version, And I'm just curious your thoughts and your reflections on this project, being involved in it for so long and to finally have this finished product. Maybe just tell us a little bit about that.
For me, it's been so many things, because I've learned so much working on this, from the writing to casting to recording to, like you said, getting people together to rehearsing. And, you know, even as a director, I used a green screen for the first time in a production like this, and we used it really phenomenally. And, you know, I've learned that. So for me, it's been like this, like, baby that has, like, helped grow me into kind of more of what I want to do. It helps me think about things like that. And I'm so proud of it. Like, I know that when we started doing the recording and what we're going to release in April, it's like, it didn't start off like, oh, we're going to make this video for people. But once people see it, I think it's just going to open more doors and people are going to want more of it. So I think it's just the beginning.
Yeah, and we may see the day a live band it was originally intended to be might happen. And this video version, though, has elements that probably wouldn't be possible in that format. So it's a really cool thing. And, like, to me, to watch everyone do things they didn't necessarily have a lot of experience with, like just Bam said, just grow in that way and do something different, was really cool for sure. And I do want to mention one other thing too, which I think this part when we were talking earlier got cut. So we haven't at this time reached out to, these are actual people, some of whom are still alive, and like we haven't reached out to them at this point, and this is sort of a juncture where we're thinking about that. But two people, unfortunately, that are very important to the civil rights movement, one of whom was is a character in this story, passed away while we were working on it. So C.T. Vivian was a pivotal part of these events, and a well-known leader in Nashville, Reverend C.T. Vivian. So this is not one of the students, but one of the older preachers that Lawson was working with from the beginning. And he passed away while this was going on. And very close to that time, John Lewis also passed away, who we didn't include as a character. I think I mentioned him before, or maybe I didn't, but there was an event at Legislative Plaza across the street from the Capitol that was put together by a lot of local Nashville organizations, and that was like to honor them. You know, a lot of local politicians and everything were there, and I went down there and like to see that and like start to sort of see and realize, that
the history,
the connections to like right now and like where some of these people are now, and
it's amazing
to just sort of
and I see think the history biggest and reality thing is all come together. Like we that. All know the story of the sit-in movement, you know, because we do mention this. North Carolina also did the same thing, but as people, Nashvillians themselves, I don't think a lot of them know what the impact was of this city to that movement. I think John Lewis being, going to school here and stuff. So us focusing on the colleges and the students and the time frame.
Maybe a little broader timeline would be good here, just as far as that goes. Because so at the point in time where our story starts, the Montgomery bus boycott had occurred, 5 years earlier or something around there. The Brown versus Board of Education, which supposedly desegregated schools, had happened years earlier. And we refer to that in the story because the reality is that was not happening, or was only had just begun to happen in Nashville specifically.
They had just desegregated the airport.
So the mayor had worked on that previously, but federally, like supposedly schools were desegregated, but that wasn't actually happening, and that was a part of the story where at this point in time it's like, so there's another person we decided not to include named Reverend Kelly Miller Smith, who led the desegregation effort of the schools. And, you know, I think we mentioned his name in the project, but we don't have him as a character or anything. So he was like a leader in one of the churches where these things were happening in the basement the first time when Lawson came and did that. So
I think that, you know,
one more thing real quick, actually. Yeah. So that's kind of the, like, before this part of the story, and then the after this part of the story definitely would be the Freedom Rides, which is what these very same people went on to do in different mm-hmm. places. And then, of course, you know, Selma and Mississippi.
Those
and
are stories
else.
That I'm familiar with. A lot of people are familiar with. I wasn't familiar with the Nashville
piece of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we read that this was the first mass march of the civil rights movement when everyone walked down Jefferson Street as a response. The same day that it happened, they just do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and this was not like something they had seen other people do in other cities. It's like they did this, and no one else had ever done anything like that before. So, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott was different. It wasn't a mass of people that. It was boycotts, which is different sort of thing from like a march.
Well, I definitely come away from the project inspired. I learned a lot. And I got to do a lot of different things. Even editing was something I learned from being a part of this project.
Right?
So I'm kind of inspired to do more things. And I'll tell you the other thing that happened from this is, I bonded with all these other people, all these other artists, and I've got to know all these people on a more personal level. So that's been really cool. But we're getting closer to the end here, so I want to make sure that we actually talk a little bit more about the event that's coming up, when it is, where it's at, maybe how people can get involved, and maybe lastly, you know, what's the future hold for this project?
Okay, so we are going to premiere the video version that we have now at NECAT on April 20th. We're going to show the video, and we're going to do like a question and answer period with the cast.
That's on the Nashville State Community College campus on White Bridge Road. It's going to be a free event. Just stick that in there.
Yeah, we'll just come and watch it, and then we're going to air the play itself on NECAT, on the Music and Arts channel, and also on the QTV channel that same week. So it'll play at that time. So we just want everybody to sort of take a look. And then the future for me, like, I don't know. For me, I want to record it again in the studio as a play, but really put the effort into the production of the play. So that's my dream that I'd like to see come out of it.
I thought too, in any sort of video version, like the fact we could theoretically shoot on location where some of these things actually happen would be a really cool thing, and a like expanded version of the video. And then of course there's the like the possibility of the live event still occurring, you know, with the same cast or potentially with different cast members, if that's how things go or whatever. But, you know, I think in terms of just how this thing came together, and like has been said, different people picking up some different skills along the way. I mean, my involvement still remains like mostly focused on the writing and music production and samples and working with the DJs. And definitely what you see visually is just Bam's vision. She directed it, so like the responsibility was passed there at the point we started shooting, and you know, she's directing and starring in it, so let's just like props here, like we could have probably used any future iterations of it would be cool, like if somebody was the main director that's not also trying to star in it. So,
and you know, shout out of course Nashville Fringe Festival who kind of, you know, brought this to the table. And go to NashvilleFringeFestival.org. I'm sure all this information will be on there. But again, just to wrap it up, so it's Saturday, April 20th. That's correct.
2024 at NECAT, which is on the campus of Nashville State University. And we're going to start at 4 p.m.
Door at 4.
And the entire play is about 40 minutes from end to end. And we're just going to let everybody see it. We've been holding this baby for a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. And, you know, when we first took it on, it was intended to be done a lot faster than this, and we hit a pandemic and a lot of other snags. So thanks again to Nashville Fringe Festival for the opportunity to be able to do something
and the patience and the understanding and to everybody who worked on it, who gave us a shot, took this idea.
Oh, and shout out to Kneecat, of course. Yeah. And like, y'all should check out also Cultureville is Just Bam's TV show she already does there to highlight Nashville music and all that culture, not just music.
Not just culture, it's everything.
Well, thanks to you guys, Just Bam and Al D for being here with us tonight and talking about this project. And you guys can check it out Saturday, April 20th. Doors open at 4 p.m. at Kneecat. Make sure you're there. It's the Sit-In Mixtape brought to you by the Nashville Fringe Festival.